Dan Mitchell from the wonderful world of wellbeing, my guest for today's podcast. And thank you so much for joining me, Diane. I was looking at the work that you have done and are doing, and this whole thing to do with the wonderful world of wellbeing, I find really, you know, fascinating and important. And one of the things I was thinking was that if you could just tell us a little bit about it and some of the things that you are involved with. And Diane, how did you get involved in wellbeing in the first place? What's your passion about it? Why is it important? There's a lot there, I know.
There is. It's a massive gamut, and probably all what we can't cover on this podcast today. But yeah. First of all, thank you, Phil, for inviting me. I'm absolutely delighted to be here and sharing this with everybody who's going to listen, and hopefully people they will pass it on to as well. So my name is Diane Mitchell, and going back to sort of the beginning of what the outcome is at the moment of the wonderful world of wellbeing, about 16 years ago, my life took a dramatic turn in terms of I was presented with a really what I would constitute as a high challenge in my health by way of I was given 12 weeks to live. And although I was working autonomously, I was in business. I've been in business since I was 19 years old. And I was operating a very successful business at the time. But the moment that I was given that information of, you know, looking at my mortality, and I didn't decry any of it because I was wearing it. I knew there was something dramatically wrong. However, every facet of my inner world, other than my name, just completely fell away. It was like there was a whole new jigsaw to emerge, and not negating anything of the work that I was doing. And I was running a type of healing business at the time, but I just knew that that was done and something else had to emerge. And through the following, the prognosis itself, I had this inner shift that I wasn't of the understanding of what had happened in that moment that I was given the information, but an inner shift took place. And I suppose the easiest way to describe it now is a complete unification of mind, body, and my soul, if you like, my higher self. And this belief immediately came in that I wasn't going to die. And that never left me. It was just absolutely resolute, and it just never, ever left me throughout the process. And although I needed an operation and potential medical help to get through it, I just remained resolute. So I was working with both sides of the scale of this inner shift and this feeling that some people in today's world would say, well, that's woo-woo. You know, I didn't know what woo-woo was. And I understand what, on a broad scale, of what people term woo-woo today. But I was looking at scientific evidence and the strength of what I was looking at, and the power of what had happened internally with this shift just allowed me to remain resolute. And I also decided that whatever that was that had happened inside me, once I was through my journey with this, because although I needed medical support, I knew internally in my mind, a catastrophic explosion took place at that exact moment that I was given a few weeks to live. And I could see it. And I thought, before I do anything else, I'm just going to attend to what's happened and happening in my mind. That became my immediate priority. So throughout the next 12 months, I was just fortunate that the right people came into my life, counsellors, psychotherapists, even my support team at the hospital, and all these holistic practitioners. That I've always been holistic in my way of being in my life, but for some reason it just amplified. I didn't go and look for anybody, people just came in, and that became my support journey throughout the next 12 or 18 to 18 months. And at the end of that, I decided to go back and explore what had happened in my mind, which led me to part of the work that I do today. So I'm a mindset therapist, and I operate a practice called Change Your Mind, Change Your Life, which allows people to rewrite the software of the mind and the noises, the stories that's being told. in quite a succinct fashion.
Yeah.
And I brought that together based on my experience, because I realized that at critical moments in life, you don't have time to sit and talk about things for 12 months. Sometimes you just need the answers, and you need the past clearing, and you need to be present to be able to make a new, rewrite a new script, if you like, and one that's true to your own self.
Yeah.
So it's about rewriting, moving over outdated belief systems that we all have, we all inherit, and we all live by. And sometimes we don't know that they can be changed.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that, because that's something I come across very often with the world of money. And I mean, typical beliefs like money will give me happiness, or money will give me power, or money will give me choice. And when you think that way, then the other assumption is that you don't already have those. So the question then is, how much money do you need to feel happy or feel powerful or have those choices that you believe you don't already have? And it's interesting when you sort of watch people sort of think about that question. Whatever sum they come up with, immediately you can say to them, well, double it, treble it, because when you get there, you realize that it's not giving you what you're desiring, what you're seeking. And it's that belief that money has greater power than it actually has. And I often say to people, it's like, you know, treating money is like treating an ornament on the side and saying, I don't like the ornament anymore. I'm going to put it away in a drawer. And the ornament then saying to you, but I don't want to be in the drawer. I want to be on the mantelpiece or on the windowsill. And it's ludicrous to think that way. But we think that way with money. So I get what you're saying when you're talking about changing mindsets and beliefs, and people carrying beliefs that actually act as a kind of barrier for them to be able to move forward.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, to use your analogy of an ornament, sometimes the ornament doesn't work in your favour, does it? It may not treat you the way that your desire was.
Yep.
And using an ornament as an analogy clearly is an indicator that people are looking externally for the internal peace. And when you look externally, that itself either endorses the belief system that you have already, or it brings it more to the forefront, it sort of substantiates it, but it creates a whole different set of false beliefs. You know, you could generalize, but a lot of the time I hear people saying, well, you know, money does make the world go around, money does make me happy. And by that perception, they're thinking of big houses, a nice flash posh car, lots of money in the bank, and all these holidays and da 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 da, whatever goes with stuff, right?
Yeah.
But money is energy, and energy is what's within us, and it's how we choose to spend that internal energy and how we choose to manifest that.
Yeah, and separate that away
from the mind monkeys.
Yeah, I give you an example as well in terms of what you're just saying. When even people who don't have money have dreams and aspirations in life, and the number of people who, if you were to look at the makeup of people who do the Euro Millions, the lottery, and things like that, people who gamble. And really sort of get beneath the surface of why do they do this, it's to do with their dreams and aspirations, their comparison with themselves to others, thinking that if I had a nice big house, if I had a nice flashy car, if I could go on those holidays, then I would be a much happier person. And yet, when people do win those things, like winning Euro Millions, the stories that come back of how it's destroyed their lives, because they've looked at something, an inanimate object, as though it could give them something, as though it had the power to give them something, when in actual fact, you're right, it's the attitude, it's the beliefs that we hold within that actually transform what happens externally.
Well, one of the first things that the human conditioning does is create suffering. And at all levels, whether you're rich and whatever that means, and whether you're poor and whatever that means, human suffering is involved in the mind, and it's a natural process for the mechanics of the mind to keep us in human suffering, because it does connect to negative hormones, which is what tells us the negative stories. So it will it will protract that rather than a positive aversion. But what the human being does is externally, like the example you've just given, well, if I had a bigger house and if I had a flash car, or I could have, they're actually comparing themselves to others. And straight away, that is putting people in a position of they're coming from lack and lower self-esteem. Even if they don't see that and they don't understand that that's what's happening, because they're comparing themselves to others, and that aspiration to get to where person X, Y, and Z is means that they unconditionally believe that they're behind the score line. So they're coming from a deep sense of loss to start with. So they're coming from lack and they're creating loss. And what's missing in the journey is they're working towards getting somewhere that's not right for them. They're externalizing it and wanting to mirror what's happening for someone else as well. The gambling, the Euro Millions, the whether it's backing horses or doing the Euro or lottery, or eating or not eating to even save money to get to where you want to be. All these things are actually addictions. Yeah. And addictions are born out of inner pain. Yeah. And inner pain comes from not having the ability or support system or acumen to be able to go into that pain and unpick that and decipher it. And that can be a coping mechanism, or it can just be the environment. Lots of people live in that.
I know. And I come across, you know, people have lots of different ideas and approaches. And yet you can see that those things in terms of mindset and projecting their desire, their wishes, their aspirations onto external things, as though those external things like money could give them those things. Now, they might contribute, but they won't necessarily address the lack within. And the other thing as well is, when they start to realize, well, this isn't enough, I need more, because it still isn't giving me what I'm wanting. It's the issue of anxiety around money is such a major issue at the moment, whether it's in the workplace or in our society. There's a rising tide of anxiety around money, and it's not just because of the pandemic. It's because of oftentimes the mindsets that we have, as though money has a power beyond what it actually has. And when we start to realize it's not giving us what we want, then we start to feel anxious about it. And the thing about anxiety is that you can't, it's very difficult to make rational choices. And when you're dealing with money, your choices need to be rational. And they say that 80% of the decisions we make around money are emotional. And if we're not aware of where those emotions have been driven from and what those emotions are, then it's understandable then why we repeat the same behaviours, the same mindsets, the same choices around money that oftentimes will undermine what somebody actually really wants going forward. So it's a big issue, isn't it? I'm just conscious, obviously time wise. I just wanted to ask you, tell us a little bit more about the wonderful world of well-being and some of the things that you do and that you've drawn others into to take the whole thing of well-being forward.
Okay. So like I mentioned earlier, Phil, I work in private practice on a one-to-one basis.
Yeah.
And I also teach groups in an educational setting. And at the moment, because of the pandemic, 91% of the population are online. So I teach online. I opened a brand new academy last year, which is working really well, taking people through a variety of inner work to get to developing their businesses as they want and further for today's need. Because the anxieties around what you've talked about, wealth and money, is absolutely paramount. It's always been there, but it's exacerbated. So actually bringing that to the forefront and allowing people to explore that and move through, but put interventions in place to move through, is part of what this core program is about. So with that, the broader picture is that's the work that I do. And while it's really effective, changing the whole person from the inside out, for whatever degree they require, that's my work. And I'm pretty proficient at working with the mind and unification of all the emotions and the higher self and the body. But then well-being is broader than that. That is one aspect. And I've got some fantastic mindset professionals in my circle as well. But one of the things that I am good at is also bringing big groups of people together and connecting the right person with the right person. And one day when I was working in my private therapy on a one-to-one basis, and it was working, but it became really, really conscious that it was one-on-one and more people needed more choices of well-being in terms of alternatives. And I'm not talking woo-woo. I'm not talking about what people would perceive as woo-woo. I'm talking about alternative pathways so that they become equipped with a toolkit for choices for their life now and into the future.
That's good.
And that healing and getting better and fixing things isn't necessarily at the end of a prescription. And I sit quite comfortably. I think we marry up perfectly well with the NHS systems and the global systems we've got for NHS and what they bring on the scientific level. But of course, we've advanced so much that we've got scientific-based studies now that have come to the forefront for energy matters, things that matter, what's going on within the mind and the body, that quantifies the ability to be able to substantiate groundedness around the woo-woo, what people would perceive as woo-woo. And I think people call it that because they don't know what well-being is. So my journey is to bring that awareness to the forefront and to let people see that there are other choices. It's not necessarily in my position. I was offered an operation and treatment after it and da-da-da-da-da. And that was that avenue which I chose. In the end, I changed. But naturally, all the holistics seeped in a much broader scale. What happens with holistic therapy is it sits in perfect alignment with every cell inside the body. And I mean, we've got 80 billion cells, and each one of them have their own brain capacity. So they know the difference of what's right for us and what's not. So holistic well-being and clinical holistic well-being can be measured, and it can be measured either clinically or it can be measured with the response from the human system. Just bringing that awareness and shining a spotlight over whether it's epigenetics, different types of massage, what will bring different types of relief to the human system in terms of the mind-body correlation. And products, natural products that sit comfortably within the cellular system, so it's not causing any disruption. So
That's brilliant. I just remember reading a book called Molecules of Emotion by Dr. Candice Pert, and she had this statement. She just basically said the body-mind. She would often refer to the body-mind. So when we think about the mind, we think about the grey muscle in our heads. But in actual fact, the mind is the entire body, because your body remembers. And
everything.
And I thought it was very good, that point that she made in her book. Sadly, she's no longer with us, but has left a sort of foundational work that people have been building on since then. Diane, we're out of time, but thank you so much for coming on to the Wisdom Chat podcast. My name's Phil Holdsworth of Aurum Gold. If you want to ask any questions or know any more about the world of well-being or money psychology, or just some practical helps, then please go onto our website, aurumgoldltd.co.uk, and I will put you in the right direction with the right kind of people who can give you the kind of help you're looking for. And if you're an employer, then part of supporting your employees would be to include financial well-being in your well-being strategy. So it is important. It does have an impact on your business. So I'm Phil Holdsworth. Thank you very much for listening.